All right. The very delightful Amy Schumer is standing by. By the way, tomorrow, David Letterman. The real David Letterman. Look, there's Amy Schumer all relaxed in her house. Look at you.
Oh, yeah. Good morning, hair.
Good morning, sunshine.
The birds.
How's that song go? Good morning, sunshine. I'll give you the day. Anyway.
I don't know the nitty blue bloopy part.
Yeah, bloody blue.
You know that song, Robin?
Yeah.
Of course she does. Everyone knows that song. How are you doing, I mean, you know, with this whole thing?
I'm good. I'm one of those like assholes. It. I mean, I'm worried. It sucks, but I'm okay. I was like, when I was pregnant and then after the baby, you're supposed to like kind of just be with your family for a while. So I kind of feel like I was used to it.
Yeah. Are you freaking out?
Seeing anybody. Was
I?
Yeah. We live in New York. So it was like, you know, terrifying.
Yeah, but I mean,
and really upsetting.
You know why it's upsetting? I was thinking about you because you just had the, how old is the baby now?
He's going to be a year on May 5th.
Like, this is when you would be taking him outside, you know, yeah, like taking him for a stroll with the stroller. Now it's like you live in a world where you have to be terrified of other people and bringing the baby around other people. I feel bad for like young mothers. I do.
Yeah. I mean, we like fled New York a couple weeks ago. But while we were in New York, it was really awful. And you know, we were taking him outside less and less, and then all of a sudden paparazzi were showing up because I think everyone else left New York and I was like the last person in town.
You were the only celebrity left.
Yeah, I felt bad for them. And I was like, guys, look, I'm leaving town. They were like, oh,
you can't leave.
Yeah. Like, well, where are you going? I'm like, well, here, I'll be at this address. Oh, wait, you want to see the baby?
Oh,
yeah. Let me see that baby.
Come here.
See what you produced.
Let's see what I.
Wow.
Oh, my goodness. He's so cute.
He is cute.
Why are you so surprised, Robin?
I'm shocked. I mean, I didn't know what your baby would look like. He's adorable.
That is so rude. Do you hear this, Gene?
Gene, by the way, I love the story that you gave Gene a middle name after David Tell, the great comedian. You're not going to tell him this? This is so great. Amy and her husband named, they like the comedian David Tell. They have a relationship.
Apparently they love David Tell.
Right. And so Amy gave Gene, baby Gene, the name Gene Attell. And you know, for a middle name. And then realize, when did you realize that that really sounded like genital? Genital.
Okay, wait, babe, when was it? When did we realize? Like a month in? Like a month in. I mean, you know, you're like the new parents, like just kind of tired and in ecstasy. And then I don't know if like some troll on the internet or somebody, and I read it and I was like, oh my God, because you know, you're going Gene Attell, like it just me, who's like a filthy person. Like it never dawned on me. And I was, all the blood rushed to my head and I was like, Chris, and everyone's like saying, I don't think it's a big deal. I don't think it's a big deal. I'm like, what are you talking? A boy named Sue sued my son. like I, you know, all you want to do is protect your baby. I right out the gate named him. And Chris's last name is Fisher. So it's genital fissure.
Oh, I mean, my God. Like, genital fissure.
Oh, it really lets you know the kind of parent I'm going to be.
Oh, my God. You know, as bad of a name as genital fissure would be, Howard is still a worse name.
You're right. Howard is disgusting.
It is a worse fucking name to. How do you look at a baby and name him Howard? It's just ridiculous.
It's not right.
Yeah,
it's
but
not
like
right.
It's like at first I thought, well, maybe Amy's going for the laugh with the kid. You know, fuck it and go. You know, like maybe go all in. The next kid will be curly pubes or something. I don't know. You know.
I know. Everybody kind of gave me credit, like, and I was just like, no, that is just a huge fuck up. That is just the first of many failures.
I know. When, yeah, you're like you're starting out as a new mom and you already fucked up. You're
right out the gate.
Out of the gate. Right.
Boom. Yeah.
Hey, I'm really bad at this mom thing. I just named my kid genital fissure. Oh my God.
How much, like, how do you miss that? It's just, there's so much wrong with it. I mean, it's just awful.
Do you think that's the subconscious comedian in you that, like, you actually, on some level, knew Genital Fissure would be a great funny name and there'd be a bit out of it eventually? And who knows? Maybe that's the comedy mind.
I don't think so. I would love to give myself that credit. I really think I just have, like, major disabilities.
You know who the real sad part of that story is? Poor Dave Attell.
He was a little resistant to it. Like, he was a little, like, you know, because he's, like, my really good friend for, and I've known him my whole life, actually, and he's really humble, you know. He's just like, oh, I don't know. And then, but he was really moved by it, you could see. And then we had to just get his name right out of there. But we did change it to David, so it's his first name. And my dad's
How far into the pregnancy did you tell Dave Attell that, hey, Dave, I've known you my whole life. I respect you as a comedian more than anyone. And I'm going to name my first child the middle name after you. Like, when do you sit down and have that conversation with him?
I think when I was like 8 months pregnant. But I mean, he's like my family friend. Like, I've, you know, he's like family.
You knew him your whole life?
Yeah. His mom took care of me and my sister after school.
No kidding.
How crazy? Weird
is that? Is he a lot older than you?
His mom is the smallest person you've ever seen in your life. She's just... You can pick her up with one hand. She works at the Judaica shop. Just to start supporting off as Jewish as possible.
Did you have to call him and say, listen, Dave, we made a horrible mistake. We realized the kid's name is, you know, Genital.
I think I didn't even tell him. I mean, listen, I am unwell. Like, I am not a fit mother or human that should be walking around the world, you know.
Right.
I think he found out from, like, the news.
Oh my God, that's so funny. Like, like, he finally was honored.
Never ending web of nightmares.
Much as Dave Attell would say to you, you know, hey, you know, I don't care, I don't want you to name your baby after me, you know, it probably turned them on that you did that. It was probably the greatest honor. And, like, no one has ever named a baby after me. I would think that's the greatest thing. And then to take
it's not
it away.
Your fault, it's your name.
I know. Yeah. What are you going to do? Hey, so what happened? You fled New York, and now where are you? Do you give that location?
Martha's Vineyard. Chris is from Martha's Vineyard. We somebody let us stay at their place on the vineyard. So we are now, I mean, really, we went from, you know, what New York is like. It's and now we can actually, like, Jean can walk outside in the grass and, you know, we're not, like, terrified. It's New York is tough. I mean, not like the news isn't covering it, but it was really heavy. But then there was, like, also this sense of, like, we're going to stay here and we're stronger than the storm. And I'm like, let's get our baby out of here and not get photographed every time, you know, we get a breath of fresh air.
Man, no, but, you did the
so
right
now
thing.
We're on Martha's Vineyard and we're with our nanny. We have a part-time nanny. And so just the four of us and our dog, who I could honestly kill with my bare hands because she jumps on me and wakes me up every morning.
What do you
don't tell Beth I said that.
Right.
I mean, Beth doesn't care about dogs anyway, right?
No, she loves dogs. We got into
hunt the dog right up the street.
No, we love dogs. Why, your dog's being a pain in the ass? Did you train your dog?
No, I mean, not. We had so many trainers, you know, like every city we would go to, they would, like, we'd be living in New Orleans for a couple months, get a trainer there. She just, I mean, you can't get a dog to stop barking. Like, there's nothing, you know? And she just, she was my baby before Jean. I was just like, I would die for her. I would throw myself in front of a truck. And now I'm like, I don't know. Should we give her away?
Oh, God.
No, it's not like,
don't
not.
Tell Beth that. No.
Yeah, don't tell Beth that. You know,
like, I sleep with her every night and we, like, you know, she, like, sleeps on my head every night, but.
We do this animal rescue, and 99% of these people, I want to fucking kill them. They're like, oh, we had the baby. The baby's allergic. Can you help us get rid of our cat? And I'm like, fuck you. That's a family member. You bought in. You take care of your cat, and your baby's not allergic. They can't be that. You know, it's just bullshit. We know they're bullshit.
Like, and also grandma. Grandma was living with us, and the baby doesn't really, she sneezes when grandma's around. Can you hear her out?
Yeah, exactly. So
it is true, though. I'm not proud of it, but, you know. My friend Keith Robinson was like, you will not care about that dog. And now I'm just like, dog, do you want to shut up?
What do you do? How do you keep the nanny? Like, in other words, the nanny can't leave or else that would be dangerous because she could go out. So how did you convince her? I mean, you must have paid her a ton of dough to get her to stay with you full time. In other words, she can't even go anywhere. She's got to stay with you guys.
Yeah. Well, you know, she's a full-time student. So she just is now her classes are online. So, and she's from the Philippines and, you know, her, so she doesn't have family here or whatever, like more her family. So it's like, if she weren't with us, she would be with her roommates. And well, yeah, we were like,
God for her.
I'm going to go get my stuff from my roommates. We were like, no, but you're not. You're not.
No.
We went over there. We were like, they can put the bag inside. So, you know, it is cool. It's a, you know, way for her to make a bunch of money and we're comfortable. And Chris is a chef. It's a pretty sweet setup. And we're all working as a team. And, you know, she's like our friend. Like, we watch TV together every night. And it's not like, okay, good night, going to my quarters, you know.
Yeah, right.
And now she's a professional camera person.
Right. Do you realize, like,
she's getting all kinds of skills. Yeah.
Can you imagine if you didn't have that nanny, though? You would go out of your fucking mind. I mean, she could, like, right now say to you, listen, Amy, I want $1 million a week salary. And you'd have to pay her. You'd have to.
I'd be like, take two million.
Take an extra million.
Yeah. My friends who don't have a nanny, like, I know that they can no longer love me. And that's okay. Right. You know, I can't complain about any, there's nothing I can, I'm like, oh, I named my son Genital. They're like, I don't care. You have a nanny. You are not, you're not of the same world as me. No, thank God for her.
You know, right before the whole quarantining and this COVID-19 thing started, I remember I follow Oprah on Instagram. I'm obsessed
with
that.
Hip.
Oh my God, I'm obsessed with that Instagram account. And then you showed up because she did that tour of America and you were one of her honored guests who came to speak to Oprah in front of
saying honored guests. I'm a very accomplished.
That's honored.
Very honored guest. I know. It was like Michelle Obama and me. I was like, am I on this list?
But how does that work? Like, does Oprah says, hey, Amy Schumer, you're popular, you're funny, you know, you're somebody people respect. I want to interview you in front of
athletic.
Right. I want to interview you in front of Madison Square Garden or whatever the place was that you were. And then do you get part of the booty? Like, do you get part of the money that comes in for showing up there? Because you kind of were the whole show, if you think about it.
Yeah. No, it's she flew me in and out the same day so I could be back with the baby. I was in North Carolina. And I mean, the way you get paid is that you get to hang out with Oprah.
Jesus. And she's got a racket. I'm telling you, I would have been like, hey, Oprah, look, somebody here is making some dough. I'm showing up to do a live appearance. How about coughing up a couple of dollars? I would have put it to her. I would have.
No, I mean, the arena that we performed in, I've done, you know, I did on my own as a stand-up. So I felt like, I mean, I had so much fun doing it. And she's been so sweet. Like, when Gene was born, she bought him like a library that says Gene's Book Club on it. And she's really been there for me. If she's trying to like kind of cash in on who her friends are, she deserves it. And I was very proud to be on that list, to be honest.
What's your assessment of show business right now? Are you now so isolated and enjoying your life at home that you're losing that desire even to go out and perform? If this thing was over like in 2 or 3 weeks, like, are you starting to feel like, you know what, this might be my life. Maybe I just want to be home with my husband who cooks and the baby. Or do you still have that burning passion, or is things shifting?
The thing that I'm like getting used to is like, I mean, I get to be with the baby so much. And even though it's amazing that I can walk away from the baby, you know, when Jayden's not in school, it's like all this time spent with him that I wouldn't have had. Like, I got to see him clap for the first time. I'm, you know, it's so much time. You don't get this. It's such a luxury to spend this time with your baby. But no, I will run away from the house screaming when I can go back on stage. Screaming. And I won't see Chris, I think, for like 2 months, because I'll just be with my friends talking shit about him.
Are you still writing material? Like, I know that, I mean, I know a little bit of your process. I'm always fascinated by comedians' process. Like, when I get a hold of Jerry Seinfeld, I break it down like by day, by day, by day.
Yeah.
But are you?
Did you see his special?
Not yet. No. Is it on?
No, I got to see a sneak thing. It is so good. It is the special.
He is endlessly funny.
It's so good. It's coming out May 5th.
But he is a comedy machine. Like I spoke to him the other night, and I was speaking with him and his wife, and I said, "Jerry, are you writing every day? Are you?" And he goes, "Yeah." He goes, "Oh yeah." He doesn't mind quarantine. He's taking time off the road. He's fine with it because I thought he'd go insane.
It's his normal life. It's his normal life. People just can't ask him for a picture now.
Right, but I thought that he would go insane because he loves to perform live. You know, that's his thing. He goes on the road all the time anyway because he loves it.
Yeah,
but he's fine with it. He's fine.
Yeah, I don't. I'm not missing going on stage as much as I miss hanging out with the comedians at the Cellar. But I'm still like, you know, I have a TV show for Hulu, so we're finishing writing that. So it's like, I'm still doing Zooms and we're editing this documentary and, you know, I'm still like working.
Are you writing a material for stand-up? Even like, do you get up and have
just
set
a little
day?
Bit, but it's like, what do you, it's so weird. It's like, you know, Ted Alexandro has this great special, on YouTube right now that he's done from Instagram lives in quarantine. And like, that's what I want to see right now. You know, how do you get back up and start complaining about like the bank? It's like,
right,
bitch, we haven't left the house in 3 months. Like nobody's been to the bank. Yeah. I'm not writing jokes. Not really.
Yeah. I can't imagine. Jerry claims he's home. He does write every single day, which is just mind blowing to me.
He's disciplined like that. He meditates. He writes. I it's good that I have these appointments because I'm not good with idle time. Are you?
No. I keep myself really busy. I've never been busier.
I need a routine.
Yeah. So when people say to me they're bored in quarantine, I'm like, what are you talking about? First of all. No. You got to be doing your own house cleaning unless you're not quarantined.
Exactly. Sorry to be like honest about white privilege over here, but like I had a cleaning, like I hadn't done my own laundry in years.
Right.
And now I'm doing everyone's laundry and cleaning. You know, it's like, it is funny to be back doing that, this stuff, which, you know, actually is kind of nice to be doing again, to be like folding everyone's laundry. It's kind of sweet. I mean, everybody who's hearing this wants to punch me right in my
No, because listen, it would be a lie if you said, oh yeah, I always did my own. We know that you're successful and you've made some money. So the point is you would probably hire a cleaning woman.
No, I have a nanny. I have a nice house. I had a beautiful cleaning lady, Bertha, part of the family who I miss. And we were like kind of, like I closed my writer's room. We were writing out of my apartment and I closed it. Like the first time I heard somebody say Wuhan market, I was like, no one come in ever again. And Bertha was like, I don't want to come anymore either. We were like, we'll pay for your Uber. She was like, leave me alone.
Yeah. She's most essential. Hey, what about what's his name?
The comedian.
He was living with us.
He was writing on the show. Yeah.
You threw him out.
He wrote for like 10 weeks. He was like, I don't want to write the whole time. I'm busy. But
I thought that was the funniest thing when Kyle Dunn.
You know, I have a dumb podcast on Spotify and he's the guest today on Three Girls.
Oh, Kyle.
Yeah.
Funny guy. I thought it was so great when he came on the show and he said, yeah, you know, I'm writing with Amy Schumer and I'm like, she moved me into her apartment. I go, how long you been there? Like 7 months or something. I was like, I go, why is Amy living with you for 7 months? I mean, it sounds fun, but also kind of annoying. You know what I mean?
Well, it's like, it is really fun. We have comics live with us for months at a time. Like I've always had some comic living in my house. We like it. It's like a, you know, it's like you hang out and watch TV at night.
In other words, I couldn't do that because people get on my nerves.
Kyle and I fought. I mean, we've lived together before. We lived with Tig Notaro when we were writing the first season of my TV show. So we were old roommates. But no, I did. I screamed at him a couple times. But he's like my brother. We just, you know, bounce. We need a little time off, then we bounce right back.
I mean, that sounds kind of fun to me. Like you, Tig Notaro, and Kyle living together, writing comedy and stuff. But sometimes you need to just get away. Yeah. I don't know. It's weird.
And then it all implodes and... You know, but you know, it's worth it.
And your husband,
I live with my best friend, Rachel Feinstein, who's a comic. We live together like 2 years ago. If you can get away with living with your friends in your late 30s, early 40s, you got to do it.
Is it competitive when you live with other comedians? Do you get like, oh shit, Rachel's doing really well. She's doing better than me. She got a spot at, you know, some comedy club over me. I would imagine it also gets kind of on your nerves because you're in the business.
I would think
all
it would
the
be the other way because I'm like, you know, doing so well.
Right. Well, no, I'm saying, you know, no, that's true. And by the way, I wouldn't want to feel that jealousy on my back all the time. It would be weird.
People who like felt jealous have through the years been like weeded out and, you know, we got a good thing. And so my friends, my best friends now, they've got their own life and their own things to be proud of. So they're not worried.
You can sense that, like there's a period of time where you have a good friend who's a comic and then all of a sudden you sense their jealousy and then you go, I'm getting uncomfortable. Really?
I've had some friends be like, I just kind of can't do it.
Deal.
Yeah. And I've been like, okay. Yeah. I mean,
that's
it doesn't
so
help that I'm always like carrying my awards around and like wearing my own merchandise. I don't know. Right. Should I not? Is that bad? But I'm just so proud. Just like showering with an Emmy.
I could imagine that.
I'm trying to be respectful of my friends. And we work together a lot. You know, I would love to have my friends do everything I work on.
That's so beautiful. I'm so opposite. And I do admire that. And I'm jealous that I'm not more connected to people. Like I the thought of anybody living in my house other than my wife would make me insane.
Why? You get to go hang out with them and watch TV.
Yeah, I don't want, first of all, I hate watching TV with anybody. I don't want to hear their comments. I hate
all
it.
All I want to do is watch TV with people.
I've gotten together with people to watch The Bachelor and they're funny people. And we watch The Bachelor and then everyone starts talking and making their jokes and
you can't even watch the show.
And I go to myself, here's the sad part. I love The Bachelor. I don't want to miss a word of it.
<You're>
I don't
like
want to hear their jokes. Yeah. And when Beth says to me, oh, people are coming over to watch The Bachelor, I go, do me a favor. Don't delete it from the TiVo because I don't want, I want to go back and watch it for real by myself.
Yeah.
I don't want to goof on The Bachelor. I love The Bachelor.
You're right.
And it doesn't really matter how bad the show is that he's watching. He wants to hear every word.
Yeah, I'm like,
I was watching a horrible movie with him once, and he was shushing me for talking while it was going on.
How is your husband so cool that he doesn't mind when, like, Kyle or some other, like, male comedian is living there with you guys? Like, he doesn't get uptight about it either, right? He buys in.
Well, we also had our nanny, and we had this assistant, Philly, and she is a 20-year-old girl, and I don't care. It's like, we kind of like to entertain. We like to have, like, a family around. Yeah, he's real cool. And
I like what you did with your husband. Your husband's a chef, which is so great. I mean, especially during this time. So... this sounds like kind of a cool idea. You sold a TV show. I don't know who to who, but the show.
Offered it to us. Yeah, we weren't pitching.
right. No, I understand that. What network is this going to air on? The cooking show. Yeah. I mean, what network?
Yeah,
is
we they reached out and were like, "Do you guys feel like making a cooking show?" I was like, "I don't know how to cook at all." They were like, "Well, he could teach you," and I was like, "All right." And they made these. You know, they were like, we'll give you some money. And also they agreed to donate $50,000 to the Middleway House, which is like this amazing domestic violence and sex trafficking shelter in Indiana. And to the Immokalee Coalition, the Fair Food Project, which is for farmers to protect them because, you know, so that they can be treated like humans. So the Food Network, you know, agreed to do that. And so we were like, let's do it. And
so let me understand it. So in other words, your husband is a professional chef.
Yes.
And he is going to teach you how to cook. Now you see.
Right.
Now, are you going to make a lot of jokes while he's teaching you to cook or are you going to take it seriously?
I mean, we already shot it. Like we shot the first season. Yeah. No, I make jokes the whole time. I mean, it's just us being ourselves. So I'm like trashing him and you know, and he's like belittling me. And like, we both have like learning disabilities. So we get like, we lose focus and then, you know, it's, and we fight. It's just like, it's ridiculous. And I make drinks and then we're kind of like half in the bag. But I am learning how to cook, which is so cool because I really didn't didn't really know.
So in other words, if I watch the show while it's entertaining, I am actually going to learn how to cook something. It's not, you're not going to blow off that aspect of it, right?
Right. And make a cool cocktail. Like, if you don't know already, like, they're pretty basic. It's like Moscow Mule old fashioned, but you know.
See, I think that's good because I don't know how to, like, people come over and they want a mixed drink. I don't know how to fucking make a mixed drink. I don't drink. So it's like, but I do want to know how to do it.
I bartended for like 10 years, so I know how to do that. And I don't think the Food Network knew that, but it's cool. So I can like just kind of share little like hacks from bartending. And I don't know. I hope it's good. I mean, they were like, do you want to do this? We shot it ourselves. Our nanny is the camera person.
Wow.
We have like preset cameras, and then Jane is filming it. And they just sent us the first two episodes, and like half the shots are like kind of out of focus, but it's funny. it's so insane. And then we shot it when Gene was taking his nap. So he wakes up, guess what? He's on the show.
Isn't that a weird kind of pressure when you have a little kid like that, that, you know, like literally you live in fear that he's going to wake up because you have to finish what you're doing.
Yeah.
It's an incredible pressure, isn't it?
It's weird. It's like, and then they wake up and you like kind of miss them. And you're like so happy to see them, but you're like, okay, now what happens if I have to like poop or have a phone call? And, but you know, thank God, because Jane has class every day, from 9 a.m. to 1, on weekdays. And so, you know, Chris and it's like three people for a baby. So we're good. No complaints. And I'm sorry to all the mothers.
Are you going to have more kids?
I hope so.
Really?
I hope so. We got like these embryos, so I don't know. Like, but right now, we were gonna like try to make a move, and COVID happened, and I'm just kind of like walking back, like, okay, maybe we'll just revisit that in a minute.
Oh, you but froze
my
your
friend
eggs.
Rachel's pregnant. Like, she's about to have a baby, and everybody who's supposed to have a baby right now. I want to say Every Mother Counts is an amazing foundation. You know, Christy Turlington. So any expectant mother can like go to their site and have some questions answered if they're freaking out.
Yeah. I mean, being pregnant right now, it's not easy. I know
it's
so many women. So many women I know who are pregnant and they're freaking out because they're trying to figure out like how to go to doctor appointments and not get COVID-19. And they
can even have their partner with them.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Imagine if you get a C-section, you're holding like a stranger's hand.
Yeah. Yeah, the whole thing is so different. That's who I feel bad for right now. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's just so fucked up. But
there's so many people that come.
What's the I didn't understand this. Did you freeze your eggs or something? Because you said you have these embryos.
I got my eggs yanked out. And
how painful is that?
Huh?
How painful is that to have your eggs yanked out?
That doesn't hurt at all. For me, like everybody's a different experience of the shots you get leading up to it for IVF. I was like, they really were painful for me. Right. Some people are like, it was fine. I bruised really bad. And I, you know, I have, endometriosis and I'm all banged up. So it was a tough experience for me. I mean, I know it's a tough experience for a lot of women. It's really hard to do. And so some people, they just, you know, you get the eggs retrieved and I did that and I got something like 30 or 31 eggs. And I was like, oh my God, I am a chicken. Like I am egg. I'm filled. And I just felt like really fertile and young and just like was kind of like, you know, brushing my hair and smiling at myself. And then they were like, okay, 26 of those fertilized. And Chris and I were like high-fiving and chest bumping. And then out of that, they got one, you know, then they make an embryo. They got one normal embryo. So start at 31 to one normal embryo and then two mosaic, which means there are some abnormal cells, but you can still have a successful pregnancy with the mosaic.
It's amazing science, but it is so fucking weird and disappointing and difficult. And
going through these cycles it's really, really draining. The women who've gone through it multiple times, I mean, those people are total warriors. It's really hard and it really sucks. But that's how, you know, cool it is to have a baby that you're like all right, let's do it again, you know.
Amy, though, what about, like, you know, you ever read about these couples who go through hell trying to have a baby? They get the baby, the first baby, and now, just through fucking, regular old fucking, all of a sudden something psychologically happens where the woman relaxes or the dude relaxes or whatever it is. Then they start having kids without all that other stuff. Maybe that'll happen, yeah. Right?
Well, I mean, to be honest, I had no trouble getting pregnant. I thought something, I've never been pregnant before. So I thought something was wrong with me, but Chris and I, we tried for like 3 months and I got pregnant the third month with Gene. Yeah. This isn't about me having trouble getting pregnant again.
Oh, so why do all these? I'm confused. Then why do all that egg nonsense for stuff if you don't need it?
We have a documentary that's going to be out on HBO Max called Expecting Amy. And it follows my pregnancy. I had hyperemesis, which is, when you have severe nausea and vomiting through the whole pregnancy.
Oh yeah. And I remember seeing on Instagram, you were constantly vomiting. I was going to call you and go, Jesus, what the hell's going on with you?
Yeah, I know. Well, you know what? There's no research on it because it only happens to women. Hello? Oh. I mean, right. They have chewable fucking Viagra now, but no studies on things that happen. You know, I mean, seriously, I saw a commercial. Right. If your dick curves slightly to the right, don't worry. We've got a pill for you. We don't want you to go through that. But if you are in excruciating pain your whole life as a woman, we're so sorry. We'll get to you after we fix every slight dick problem.
Right. As soon as dick gets straightened out, I'll work on your problem.
Right. Thank you. Yeah. I just can't work on your problem with my curved dick. And, you know, every woman goes like, what is that curved dick problem? But every woman remembers one guy and she goes, oh, I hope he sees his ad.
You've had a guy with a curved dick?
Yeah. Just one. Just the one. I didn't wind up inside me. I didn't want to gamble. Because I know for a fact that I go straight back, baby.
Right. No curved dick in you.
You get waved right in. I don't know. Maybe it would have been a good time. But I just kind of touched it and we moved on.
So get back to this special you have. Because
I got hyperemesis. Right. And, you know, because some people are like, well, why don't you, whatever, throw up. Just do it again. But the you know, 1 in 3 babies die when the mother has it because you can't keep any food down. Like I was hospitalized like 10 times and I had to get an IV. I got 65 IVs.
Jesus. Is it true? I read that you threw up for 5 straight hours when you were like 15 weeks pregnant. 5 straight hours?
That yeah, it was insane. Probably a little more than that. And I mean, just, you know, you're throwing up, there's nothing left. And it's scary because you can't nourish the baby or yourself. And it's also like, you know, if you've ever had food poisoning, it's truly that for 9.5 months. It's, but all that aside, because seriously, once you meet your baby, you're like, oh my God, I would have been sick like that for 10 years just to meet you for an hour. But it's the statistics that make me, and you're 80%. Even 80% chance of having it again. It's just like if you got pregnant. And those statistics, 50% of women die. I mean, 50% of women lose their jobs, their marriages break up. You can't, I mean, imagine you have food point, like you can't do anything.
You know what it is too? Guys probably sit there and go, why is she doing all of this? You know what I mean? They're like, kind of like, hey, why doesn't she, like, can't she just be like everyone else? You know, you don't have to throw up that much. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Or they just feel helpless. I think you feel like you want to, I think Chris wanted to solve and help and you really, there's nothing to do. So it was hard. It was really hard for us to get it, but we got through it. And everything I learned about being pregnant and, you know, I'm like, I have money. I can get an IV. I can not work. I can, you know, you find out the mortality rates for women of color, like everything I found out about how women are treated medically was really a bummer. And I'm grateful I had a doula. I'm all about doulas. I know that sounds like the hippie whatever, but
No, I know about this. The doulas really do help you through, especially if you're having a difficult time. Like you can, you know, they're there for you.
Totally. And I had a C-section and you know that it's a surgery. So, but she still made it feel like you know, I was given birth and I really appreciated that. Because a lot of women feel like if you don't, you know, have the baby back, you know, you failed.
Let me understand.
And honestly,
the special.
The only thing that's comforted me about having a C-section is my still perfect pussy.
Is it perfect? Is it super tight? I know the legend about you was your pussy was magical from everyone I know who's been in there.
Thank you. It is. Yeah. You can tell I have a dream puss. It's fine.
I believe that you have a dream puss. I don't think you're making that up. I'm very proud of it. Yeah. So it's, in other words, I know someone who had a C-section who didn't even need one, who said, I don't want my puss to get loose or
good
baggy.
For them. It's your choice.
Right. That's right. So let me understand this. The Netflix, this is a special that you're doing for Netflix, not HBO the cooking Max. Show. Oh, HBO oh, Max.
HBO okay. Max is the doc. And
okay,
the food
so
network
here's what you're doing. Let me get
I'm like
let me
a real housewife over here.
No, let me understand this. So what we're going to see, which I think is very interesting. You had a special, a comedy special, stand-up special on Netflix that was very successful. What you did is you filmed the behind the scenes preparing for this thing while you were puking like 5 hours straight.
Yeah.
So we see how difficult it was to put together your stand-up special. Is that
but also you see, you know, it's like I loved Seinfeld's movie Comedian, where you follow him developing the special. So it's like I wanted to make that. And I happen to be pregnant and sick while it's happening. But you also see the jokes, like, you know, evolving. And also, I mean, we documented everything. And so it's really a lot about me and my husband and him being diagnosed as being on the spectrum and us navigating all this stuff together.
Amy, what's the deal with your husband? In other words, he didn't know he had Asperger's syndrome.
Right. Yeah.
Like his
whole
life.
Well, now it's called autism spectrum disorder because they found out Asperger had like loose ties to Nazis.
Oh, really? Who knew? Whoops. So, no, but what I'm saying is that's fascinating to me. First of all, I'm looking forward to the special because I like to see how comedians put things together. Regardless of what you were going through with the pregnancy, I like to see how you put together this.
All that
bullshit aside. Which, by the way, are you nude 2 times during this special? Fully naked, I heard, that the cameras capture you nude. Is this true?
Probably.
I don't even remember.
I mean, your body is so all over the place. Probably, yeah.
You're really comfortable.
Definitely. What?
You're really comfortable with nudity. I mean, I mean, you don't have any big deal about like showing everything on camera?
No, I don't know. Who cares?
Really?
Yeah.
I care. Maybe because I have a small dick, but you know.
Yeah, it's probably your time. Well, so do I.
If I had a big dick, I would show it. I would.
You would?
But, yeah.
Yeah, I think I would too. Why not?
Yeah, or I don't even show my wife my penis. I don't.
No, I heard you guys have sex like hossy. It's just kind of like through a sheet.
No, what I do is I turn on the lights and I wait for it to get hard. That's all. But
really?
Enough
do
about
you really?
Me. Of course. I don't want her to see my flaccid. But what I'm saying is your husband.
Chris went down on me the other day. Wait, can I just say Chris went down on me the other day? And then he kind of came up and I was like, and he goes, I'm almost hard. And I went, oh my God, thank you so much. thank you. What an honor.
Yeah, I mean, you felt he went down on you and he got excited by it. And that was a compliment to you.
But then, you know, it was truly still a third ball. But I mean, then.
Right.
You know. And then I went down on him. You know, everybody has their pattern.
You still like that? You like when your husband, it's not a waste of time? Like, you know, let's just get to the main event?
No. That is the main event as far as I'm concerned.
Really? You can't orgasm through penetration?
No, we still have we're having sex like once a week. I'm feeling very good about that.
That
it's
seems
crazy
right.
Twice a week.
I mean, you know, you have the baby and everything. If the fact that you get into the bed once a week and get it done, seems like that seems like a good thing.
It's good.
Yeah.
And we go, this is great. We should do this more, but we still just do it once a week.
Right. You do it and then you go, let's do it again tomorrow. And then you never get to it.
Exactly. And then we're like, that was a little crazy. And like, neither of us bring it up.
So here's the thing with your husband I'm so interested in. In other words, he didn't really know he was on the spectrum or whatever you call it.
No.
And then all of a sudden he notices that maybe, or you say to him what? Hey, you know, you seem to be on the spectrum or something. You know, I mean, no, like.
Actually, like, what's crazy, we're staying in the house where we were when I brought it up. What I said was a couple things happened. One of them I talk about in my special where I fell. And instead of going, oh my God, are you okay? He kind of just like stood there and didn't know what to do. So a couple of things like that. And so I Googled and I just looked up, you know, one of those like quizzes of like, if you have five of these things, you might have it, you know? And so he was on like a bike ride and he came back and I said, so I think you may be on the spectrum, which is totally cool with me and I love you. If you are interested, if you want to learn more about your brain, I would be completely down to do that together. And he was interested. And so we reached out, and we found like an amazing psychologist and she tested him. A couple of different people tested him. And then we filmed the day we go in to get the results. Like we weren't sure. I think we were both really nervous about it. And then we go in and we recorded the session where she lets both of us know.
Was he devastated?
Was he?
Yeah. Was he devastated to find out that he had something that he was on the spectrum?
No, really? he was really relieved. And I think he felt really empowered, to know that, because like people have been making him feel like he was like kind of bad and wrong and like a jerk his whole life, you know, because some of the behavior is really, it's really strange to, you know, neurotypical people. And so to hear like, oh, you're not a bad person. Your brain is different. And then here are some tools that can help you navigate your life and your communication with the people you love. It was really emotional. And he was really happy about it. I think people like this, it's the stigma. And that's why we're like open about it. You know, it's like this stigma of like, a plague falls on your house if your child has autism, and you know, there's different levels of the spectrum, but that's not what our experience of it has been at all. Like there's nothing I would change about him for real. I mean, he's my husband. Like, of course I'm like, you know, normal things, but with his brain and stuff and how he is socially, like it's all good to me. And people are like, oh, are you worried your son is gonna be autistic? And I'm not like, I mean, and of course anybody, there's so many varying degrees on the spectrum. It could be, but you know, the likelihood is that he'd be high functioning and it's like, oh, so Gene won't like be the one leading the storytelling at the parties. Like I think there are so many parts of being autistic that make someone really brilliant and lovely and interesting. And so I, you know, a lot of my favorite people.
Yeah, well, it had to be a huge relief for you because you're right. Like you're dating a guy, you're really into him, and all of a sudden you fall down and he doesn't even react. And you're sitting there going, what the, you know, you were probably like maybe I got to break up with this fucking dude, you know, because, you know, he doesn't. But now when you found out, hey, this is part of how his brain works.
Right. It's not personal. It's not about how he feels about me. Yeah. And I mean, like, it's just so fun every day. It's like also a superpower in some ways. And now people know he has it. So, you know, when I saw you last, we were at a New Year's party and we were talking to, John McEnroe.
Right.
And, John, he was like, you know, telling
Amy and I were at a party together at a guy's house, New Year's Eve. I don't
Steve
know.
Martin. Martin.
Steve Martin, the comedian. Yeah. I didn't know if Steve wanted. I don't know that. I don't know that Steve wanted it out there, but yeah, Steve Martin. Steve Martin, the greatest. Steve Martin, the greatest comedian ever, like invited me to his house for New Year's Eve. And we went and Amy was there. I was really quite happy to see her because I hadn't seen her in a really long time. And we're hanging out. And then John McEnroe was there with his wife, Patty, who I've known for 100 years. And so go ahead. Yeah, you were saying.
So John's telling a story. And then this other guy who was standing with John, I don't know. He started telling a story. So this guy's telling kind of a long, boring story. And Chris Fisher, my husband, just walks away. Right in the middle of this man's tale, he just takes a stroll. And it's like, yeah, I guess you're allowed to, like, I'd like to do that. He walks away from me sometimes, you know?
Yeah, I get jealous of that.
I know. I get really jealous too. Like, you have a sort of get out of jail free card. And I'll be like, hey, does this, like, I was, you know, about to come out. I'm like, I have nothing, like, the clothes I brought, it's all sweats, whatever. I'm like, how does this look? And he goes, well, you look comfortable. That's just like, all right, well.
But you got an honest reaction. That's it, you know.
Yeah.
No, you know, it's. I like what you're doing because you're right. Like now, instead of being ashamed and hiding in the closet about like something that you're on the spectrum, it's like, yeah, I got this, and you know, my behavior is not going to be socially acceptable all the time, but that's who I am, and I can't, you know, right. Maybe I can work on it a bit, but that's who I am.
And totally. You're a good person.
Right.
I prefer that to like the, you know, charming asshole. Like, yeah. Wow, you're going to hear the truth? What a piece of shit, that guy.
Yeah.
So, you know, everyone has a different deal with it. And I don't know what it'll be like and maybe what parents are so afraid of. But I the thing that made me cry, I cried so hard when he was diagnosed was because just thinking about him as a kid, you know, just being like yelled at instead of, you know, understanding his brain and, like, I wish he'd known his whole life so that he didn't, like, feel like there was something wrong with him.
Yeah, I mean, there's tons of people who never get diagnosed and they just think they're fucked up. Yeah. When you go to a party like that, do you ever turn to people and go, oh, he's on the spectrum. Don't be upset or don't.
You know, like, I don't think so. Did I say that to you?
No. In fact, he walked away. I was like, God, that guy's right.
You telling the story.
What?
Maybe you were telling the boring story.
The guy telling that long story. Who knows? No, I don't know. That was kind of fun seeing you that night. But I am looking forward. I'm looking forward to this special because I think it's going to be really cool to see. You know what struck me as odd though? Like you did this special for Netflix, but the special about how you prepared for the Netflix show isn't on Netflix. It's on HBO. Yeah. And those two companies are total rivals. They don't even want. So like. Was HBO cool with you mentioning Netflix in your special?
I think so. I haven't gotten any notes that they weren't, you know. I mean, yeah. I offered it to Netflix.
And they didn't take
early,
it?
Early on. Right. Yeah, they didn't, you know, they didn't see it. I have a really good relationship with Netflix and I very much love Ted Sarandos. But yeah, they didn't. The woman who watches the docs, I think, didn't get a chance to check it out. So it went to, and HBO Max was like, you know, we got a couple offers and people who really understood what we were doing. And, you know, it's not like we cashed in on this. It's, you know, it's, we're pretty much breaking even, but we thought it was a cool story to get out.
One of the things we learned in the special, and tell me if I got this right, the way you write comedy, you overwrite the premise. In other words, when you go up on stage and the first time you try something out, it's kind of a long story. It's like a big thing. You don't know where it's going to land. But eventually, after, I guess, weeks or months of trying this out on audiences, the story eventually becomes almost one sentence or two or three sentences. That's it.
It might be like three words. Yeah.
Three words.
It's so much work for such little time. That's why it takes so long to develop a special. Is because, yeah, like you could, you know, I used to do like a whole weekend on the road. I do like seven shows. And from those seven shows, I would have like, oh, I got a new tag, which would be like 3 seconds. You know, it is a harrowing, slow process.
So that's what's brutal about stand-up comedy. When you start a new act, after you sell a special to Netflix and you have to go back and do it again, You come up with a premise. You're sitting at home. You try it out on an audience. You realize when you're up on stage, a lot of this is extraneous. They don't give a shit. It's really not the essence of the joke. You yeah. have to find the essence of the joke while you're standing there on stage. And that is the difficult part, I would think.
Yeah. And you waste a lot of people's time and money. but yeah, that's what's good about like the Comedy Cellar. They have all these different rooms and, you know, so you'll go, you like pop in and try stuff out. And like, I saw, sometimes I'll like just kind of ask the audience, like, is that too much? You know, just, I mean, you can tell by their reaction, but I'll also kind of poll the audience sometimes and then watch the tape of it. And you go, okay, none of that. Really? That's not.
You'll say to the audience, hey, that's a new joke I just worked on. Do you like that joke?
Well, yeah, like I was working on a joke before I had Gene, and I was like, it was while I was pregnant. And I was like, the premise was kind of like, I just wanted to wait until I met. I didn't want to have a baby until I met the right nanny. you know, just like, and like, you know, I had some jokes about how I was about to have like a new roommate and just nanny stuff. And the audience was like, no, like, you know, we don't have nanny, it's not relatable. And so really? I don't want to. Yeah. So I don't want to, you know, I'm not like this character who's like, I'm privileged and that's my thing. And, but I'm also like honest about who I am. But if something kind of bums the audience out and makes them feel like, well, we didn't have that.
You took that joke, which I think is a really good joke. I didn't want to get pregnant until I met the right nanny. Right. And you threw it out. In other words, that never made it into your stand-up act.
Right.
I would think
that would
kill
you. Well,
it was
in the act and I cut it out.
Wow. No kidding.
Yeah.
Can you still bomb on stage, or are you too famous now at this point? You're too successful.
No, I still bomb. Yeah. I went up before a couple months ago, before Colin Quinn. He was doing a show around the corner from the Cellar, in a room called the Fat Black Pussycat. And I was kind of like, you know, it was a room of like maybe 40 people. And I'm like, let me just go up cold and like, I'll introduce you, like give these people a real thrill to see me. and I just felt like I was giving a lecture, and Colin was in the back of the room, like just bathing in joy. He was just so happy and just really enjoying seeing me bomb. And
why do comedians enjoy that so much? Why do they why does Colin Quinn love seeing you bomb so much?
What's better than watching your friends bomb? It's the best, because you know that they're up there and they're just in physical pain. I mean, but now like when I'm bombing, it doesn't hurt. Like I'm laughing at myself, you know,
but why do you bomb? You know, your material's good. You know, you went up there, you have your material. Why would you bomb at this point?
No, I'm working out new material. It's like I did this special and then boom, you've got nothing. And right. Ideas and you know, a couple jokes. So you go up and it's like, and also these shows are early there, you know, it's like for these like experimental shows, it's like 7. It's not like a hot crowd.
Does it matter what room you go? You keep mentioning this. Where is it you go all the time? What is it?
So the Comedy Cellar, the one that is in the basement, you've seen it on like a bunch of shows. It was on Louis' show.
Does Comedy Cellar to you matter in the sense that like that's a room that you like better than other comedy clubs? Like that's your place? Really?
Yeah.
What is so good about it?
So many things are important. It's low ceilings. The acoustics are good. The layout of the room. I mean, you know, there's so many things that you need. It's really basic, but you need these things to make it a good show. Like that you need to be able to hear. You don't want to have a lot of distractions and it feeling like, you know, having a seat, like you just feel like you're all packed in this place for this event versus like some cavernous place with the acoustics being really echoey and there's like a white noise from a fan and the waitresses come out at the wrong times. Like they just know how to do it and they treat the comics great. And we're all hanging out at a table upstairs, like talking.
You know what? I totally relate to that because I realized as you were saying that, I am so angry when my setup for my radio show is not exactly right.
Yeah.
I have to have the right microphones, the right headphones. I got to have, I got to have the compression the right way. I mean, I am a stickler for that. And I was about to say, well, what is she talking about? She's getting up on stage. What's the difference? But you're right.
That's what people think. Yeah. No, there's so many things. Even like someone introducing you, you know, like they'll go, I don't know if you've had this, but they'll go, okay, you're at some event. They go, Amy Schumer is coming up next. And she has been on Conan and Howard Stern and Comedy Central. And then everyone's like, and you're like, no, you have to say the name last. Like, there's just some little things that people forget. And you're like, no, you're really, you know, it's just
you're fucking me up. In other words, they should say, and now here's Amy Schumer.
Yeah, just say the name last. Yeah. I'm going to say blah, 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 Amy Schumer. And then the audience knows to clap, and then you know, go up and.
And when they do that to you, do you go out on stage and you're sitting there and like for the first 5 minutes, totally distracted by that going, that motherfucker, they did not get it right. Like, does that when just kind of like.
Earlier on, I would have been, but now it's like, you just like, I just like kind of laugh at it, you know?
Because when you were shooting your special, you were supposed to shoot it at that fat black pussycat, whatever the fuck that's called. But then you decided to shift to a big theater in Chicago.
Yeah.
Because it mattered to you, right? In other words, it had to be in the right place.
Yeah. I mean, like a special is a really big deal to a comic. And it's, you know, it's like we all do these things like, okay, I'm putting this piece of work out and then I can die. I mean, I really think it's all so that we, like I told Jerry, I watched a special and I called him and I said, you can kill yourself. And he said, you know, I kind of want to. I'm like, you should do it. You did it. The special's great. I'm going to quit comedy and you kill yourself.
Right. Jerry's like that. Jerry's like that because I had him on the show.
Oh my God, what if he kills himself? I'll be in
I know. But Jerry's like that. He did the show. He was on my show.
I know. I watched. I loved it.
And he was great. And then he said to me, I was at his house and he said, I can never do your show again. And I said, well, what do you, why? He goes, because that was perfect. He goes, I really enjoyed it. People gave me great feedback. I could never top that. So I'm never coming. I go, that is absurd. But I understood. I did understand it.
He bases like, his whole life on that Seinfeld episode where George goes, that's it. I'm out of here. And the meeting. No. Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand that feeling, but. You know, it's better to keep
I wonder
trying.
If you'll ever get back to performing live. Like, do you have a prediction on any of that stuff? I think we're going to be in this situation for at least 2 years. I'm serious.
Yeah, I have also no information and barely any common knowledge. But I also think that we're looking at 2 years. And I think, you know, a lot of people are like, okay, when are we going to get back to shooting? Like, I was supposed to be filming my show for Hulu right now. And they're like, well, they're opening up shooting in South Korea. And I'm like, okay, well, my show takes place on Long Island. let's just wait until, like, you know, the characters don't have to, like, air kiss and we, you know, put in post, make it look like they're kissing.
What's the matter? You can't move the show to South Korea and instead of Long Island and have it take place there?
They're like, well, what about Dubai? I'm like, yeah, their first date at the Burj Khalifa. I don't really see that. For this show about Nassau County.
Well, Amy Schumer is very happening. Let's remind people, not only does she have baby Jean on the scene now, not only is she in a successful marriage, she has got two shows she is promoting. She reminds us that Expecting Amy, which I am very excited about, it's an HBO Max documentary. What's going to happen there is we're going to see Amy actually go through the process of preparing a special. And the extra bonus is she's pregnant and vomiting constantly. You are now a vomit expert in a way.
I have an eating disorder.
Do you think if I played you a tape of someone vomiting, if I played a game with you, listen to this, to either somebody vomiting or somebody giving a blowjob, do you think you could tell the difference?
No.
You do not. All right. Well, then forget it.
I feel like I should say yes so that we can play the game. But if I'm keeping it 100 with you, as the kids say.
Well.
I mean, the way I give a blowjob, I would definitely know the difference.
Right. Many men have said, when you give a blowjob, it sounds like you're vomiting. So, you know, maybe that's it. But I'll play that with Robin later. Don't worry about it. But
I get to do that.
Yeah, Robin gets to do that. Robin is an expert.
Robin, don't forget how we talked about the Me Too movement.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Expecting Amy is going to air on HBO Max documentary. You're really going to get to see Amy, who's at the top of her game, prepare a special. And I, for one, am very interested in that. I always like the process of watching creative people behind the scenes. And so you'll get to see that. And from what I hear, you're nude in it twice and you don't even remember it, I'm anxious to see it. I want to see your breasts. I want to see you nude. Oh,
don't you fast forward, Howard.
I will not fast. I'll freeze frame.
Don't you pause, Howard.
I just want to see if you're fully shaved. That's it.
Oh, my God. When I was that pregnant, probably not. Chris shaved. Chris
and also,
shaving my legs because he was like getting grossed out.
Another fun thing is that Amy's husband, Chris Fisher, is a professional chef. And she has this fun show that's going to air on the Food Network where Amy actually learns to cook from her husband, and maybe you'll pick up a few tips. And Amy was a professional bartender, and she will teach you how to make drinks. So looking forward to that, too. When does that start up? When are we going to be able to actually view that?
May 11th. Really soon, 10 p.m. on the Food Network.
Yes. And watch Amy on HBO prepare for a special on Netflix, which is, I don't think any comedian's ever pulled that off before between those two companies.
I'm going to spread my seed all over this business.
Quite remarkable. Amy, thanks. I know you got a lot to get back to, and thanks for coming on. Love you
thanks
for doing
for
this. And
so
you're the
nice
best.
To see you guys. Mwah.
It's good to see you.
Thank you.
Bye,
much
Amy.
Love, guys. Bye.
There's Amy Schumer.
Thanks, emergency workers.
Right. What a sweetheart. You know, she...
she's so prolific. That's what I love.
I've seen her work live. She's really fucking awesome. Really good.
I actually missed her at the Comedy Cellar once. I went with a friend, and when we walked in, they said, "You just missed Amy Schumer."
Right. And you know what I learned? If you meet Amy and her husband is rude and he walks away from you, he's on the spectrum. He's not
he's not rude.
Walked away from me. I said, "What the fuck is up with this guy?" I didn't know. What do I know from a spectrum? I'm pretty sure I'm on the spectrum. I don't walk away from people. I just won't meet with them.